The incarnation is God's ultimate self-disclosure. It says to us, I am the God who creates all that is, and then in my vulnerability and in my solidarity with you, in my unquenchable love for you, I offer my very self to you as one of you, inviting you to live in the light of my love, to become an agent of that love, so that you, like me, can shine, can become a light that the darkness of suffering and death can never overcome. When Father Phil invited me to preach on Christmas morning, the only direction that he gave me was to share some of my thoughts on incarnation. I'm very honored to have been asked to give the sermon today, and I am very happy to think through some of the implications of the incarnation on the Feast of the Nativity with you. But I hope you've brought a few days' worth of supplies because we're going to be here for a while. Not really. But I could go on at length about this because it's really at the heart of our faith. The awesome miracle of creation itself aside, incarnation and resurrection are the two cosmic mysteries that tell us who God is. And it is incarnation and resurrection that shape our hope in the promises that our God has made to us. Although one can't really talk about incarnation without speaking of resurrection, because the two really are inseparable, it seems fitting to try to keep our eyes on the incarnation this morning, on what it means to say that in the birth of Jesus of Nazareth, our God, amazingly, took on human flesh, becoming Emmanuel, God with us in a new way, and what this says to us about who God is. In the famous prologue to John's Gospel, the fact of incarnation is made explicit right up front. Jesus is the Word made flesh dwelling among us. God is not present here as a voice, be it from a burning bush or the still small voice that follows the whirlwind. Here, God does not reveal the potency of divine power by raining fire down from heaven. And it would be so much more direct, wouldn't it, for God to make such a display? Why not do again what God did of old during the wandering in the wilderness, for example, during the Exodus from Egypt, when God's glory would visibly descend upon the tent of meeting? God could have set up shop somewhere, a high place, visible, prominent, where all could see the divine glory and hear God's own words spoken directly to them, unambiguously and with awe-inspiring magnificence. Think the Eye of Sauron in the Lord of the Rings movies. But God, instead, the God we worship as the Lord, the God of power and of might, opts to come more subtly. God comes, not openly and obviously, but in human flesh. No awesome display. In fact, many couldn't even perceive the divine presence. This is bizarre, isn't it? That God comes in a way that's difficult to perceive. And that's peculiar enough, but even more than that, God becomes a human being. It's an idea that some resisted vigorously on good grounds. I mean, how could the Almighty become one of us without a loss of serious divine dignity? But this is what we're told happened. This is why there are so many Renaissance paintings of the naked infant Jesus on Mary's lap with his cousin, John the Baptist, pointing to his little penis. Look, John is saying, this is a human being, like you, like me. This is why in the scriptures, the resurrected Jesus goes to great lengths to eat in the presence of the disciples. See, he is saying, I am not a ghost. I am a body, a new kind of body, a transformed body, but still a human body. The history of early Christianity is filled with conflicts between those who wanted to affirm the total divinity and humanity of Jesus against claims that Jesus only seemed to be human on the one hand or was sort of divine on the other. But these early Christians and the tradition since have strongly asserted Jesus of Nazareth is both. Jesus of Nazareth is a human being who is God incarnate, God in human flesh, with us in a new way, not metaphorically, but really. Why is it so crucial to insist that this is what incarnation means? There are many reasons, but today I will offer only three. First, it means that God comes to us not in a display of almighty power, but in extreme vulnerability. And taking on human flesh, God also takes on the human condition, including mortality. And with that, the capacity to suffer at the hands of others. And in becoming human, God risks God's own self by not only entering into God's own creation, but by placing the creator into the hands of the creature, for good and for ill. Humans will embrace, caress, nourish, and kiss and honor that body, but they will also spit on, scourge, humiliate, and ultimately torture that body to death. God comes to us not in a show of irresistible strength, but in the fragility of human skin, blood, and bone. Why would God become vulnerable to God's own creation like that? Because, coming to a second reason why the incarnation is so very important, in becoming vulnerable in the way God does, God is showing solidarity with God's creation, particularly where there is suffering, pain, and need. We often miss this aspect of the incarnation, as Father Phil reminded us last night, because the story has become so familiar to us that we have a hard time catching its strangeness. God does not just come to us in any old flesh. God comes to us in specific flesh, that of a colonized population living in a marginal backwater in an imperial province to parents so poor that they don't even own land. This is of a piece with a God who chose the Hebrews, a nation of slaves, to be the people whom God would be revealed to the world. At a time when divinity was associated with wealth and power, that this God is consistently identified with the least, the last, the downtrodden, the expendable, the invisible, and is then born among them, is not accidental. It is purposeful. It is scandalous. It is radical. Friends, in the incarnation, God does not take on polite flesh. God takes on the rough flesh of those who struggle to get by and live a hardscrabble, unromantic, unpretty existence. The nativity should not be imagined in precious moments type kitschy cuteness, softly lit and seen through a Vaseline smeared lens. God is born in the muck and mire of dire poverty and all that goes with it. Do you want to find me? The incarnate God asks us. Then go to those on the margin, because that's where I show up. That's where I want you to focus. Those are the bodies you need to attend to. Remember Matthew 25. In the parable of the sheep and goats, Jesus tells his hearer that whoever feeds hungry bodies, visits sick or imprisoned bodies, or clothes naked bodies, has done it to his body. Get your eyes off the rich and the powerful and see the invisible ones, see the wretched of the earth, and give them the care and the tenderness that you would give me. This is what our incarnate God says in showing up where and how the incarnation happened. No wonder the rich and the powerful saw it as a threat. No wonder Mary grasped that in the incarnation the powerful had been cast down from their thrones and the rich had been sent away empty. No wonder Herod and later the imperial forces and also the religious elite found the man Jesus who embodied, incarnated, those values to be such a threat they had to kill him. And no wonder that the wise men, the magi, who visited the baby, in being wise, could see that his death was inevitable and brought myrrh as one of the gifts to anoint his corpse. Why would God do this? Why would God enter God's own creation in the vulnerability of human flesh? And why do it in solidarity with a vulnerable population, further making God's painful rejection not only increasingly likely, but essentially a foregone conclusion? Out of love. God's desire to see creation truly flourish is the reason God goes out into what God has made, in the form of what God has made, to love it thoroughly and to the end, even to the extent of being tortured to death. And then, despite all of that no, to pronounce the ultimate yes in the resurrection. I am the God who reveals myself to you in your body as another body, making your condition my own, so that in some way you can make my condition your own, body to body, flesh to flesh. I am the God who does not hide from the complexity of fleshly life, its joys and sufferings, tragedies and triumphs, sublimities and absurdities. I am not the God who lords it over you in power and might. I am the God who is present among you as one of you. I am God with you, Emmanuel, born to you today as a poor, naked infant in a harsh world that I have come to love into its fruitfulness. This is why the incarnation of God is so very important. The identity of God, who we take God to be, hangs on it. So come, let us contemplate the baby in the feed trough. Let us look with new eyes on that helpless infant and see in him God's wisdom, God's love made human. God come to save us, not through power, but by the flesh, our flesh, through which we know what love is. And let us adore him, God with us, God in the flesh, Jesus of Nazareth, Christ the Lord.